Hi, welcome to Digital Dialogues, your compact conversations on the future of tech. My name is René from Reply, and today we're going to talk about emotions in the digital realm. And for this, I'm honored to have a special expert guest today, Javier Hernandez from Microsoft Research. Hi, Javier. How are you today?
Hello. Very good. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Thanks for joining. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and your background as it relates to, well, your research topics, effective computing, and so on?
Definitely. I'm a principal researcher at Microsoft Research. I'm part of a group called Human Understanding and Empathy, where we do a lot of work on effective computing and some of the applications of it and how we can use it and leverage in meaningful ways. And I'll share some of that afterwards. But I'm also an associate editor of the Effective Computing Journal.
Oh, wow. So I knew what you were doing at Microsoft Research, but I didn't know that you're actually also an editor of a journal. And very, very much on point here. So actually, let's dive into the topic. And so can you describe the journey of effective computing from its inception to its current state, which I think is actually quite exciting?
Definitely. Effective computing is a field of research that focuses on the development of tools and algorithms that can measure, interpret, simulate human emotions. And the underlying premise of that is that we use emotions for many different things in our life, decision-making, memory, learning. And the idea is, what if technology will have access to that information? We hypothesize that the interaction will be much better, the quality of information that you will get will be better. And there are many other opportunities across many different areas. So we have been investigating some of those. So effective computing started the field was coined in 1995 by Professor Rosalind Picard at MIT. You can imagine at that time, a female engineer proposing that machines should be able to measure and understand emotions. It was kind of a very controversial and crazy idea. But that was a time where you can think of like the movie landscape. There was like Star Wars and there was Blade Runner. So there were already some thoughts about machines having disabilities, right? But there was no field of science focused on that. So Professor Picard kind of wrote this book, a research paper called Effective Computing, where basically it was defining what a research field would look like. It was focused on that. It spoke a lot about sensing of emotions, how they manifest, when they are relevant, some of the applications, and also a lot of the ethics of it, right? Like what will happen if machines or robots will have emotions, right? And since then, the field of research has been growing quite a lot. There is an annual conference now. There's the Transactions of Effective Computing Journal, which is quite popular. And during the recent years, we have also seen a lot of growth and a lot of applications across the industry. You might have seen some of the facial expression analysis SDKs to capture some of the emotional cues. Also, there are SDKs for example, speech analysis to know whether I'm happy now or perhaps I'm stressed or frustrated. And then these have been applied in many different industries, like you can imagine customer service, right? To know whether the customer is frustrated, right? And needs special attention. Or perhaps you can use facial expression analysis to understand whether you are paying attention to the mobile phone and whether you like the content of it, right? And customize the content and provide more personalized information. And in our group at Microsoft Research, we do a lot of work on mental health because we identified that this is one of the areas where effective computing has unique possibilities in the sense that emotions, again, play a very important role in our lives. So imagine that you have technology that has access to these cues, right? Imagine that you are working and you have a technology that can tell you, hey, your heart rate is increasing. You are moving your mouse very quickly. You are actually typing quite fastly on the keyboard, right? Perhaps it can make you aware about those cues so you can take control of your stress before it's too late, right? Before you get angry, you start discussing heated arguments with your colleagues, right?
Or smashing the keyboard into the monitor.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then imagine that this technology could give you just-in-time interventions, right? Like perhaps it just suggest you to have a break, or perhaps reaching out to a specific colleague. And these pattern of interaction, you can think that it applies to many different areas. I told you about work. We do a lot of work on the future of work, how this relates, for example, to productivity, right? How can we deploy artificial intelligence in a way that it's meaningful and augments people's goals, right? Which can be productivity, can be well-being, emotion regulation, and things like that. But again, effective computing has many applications across a wide variety of sectors. For example, the metaverse is a big domain for that. There are so many possibilities there. You can imagine now with LLMs, large language models, all the possibilities that we have when you're interacting with these agents that actually sound like humans, or they are able to interact and decode your language quite well, right?
Yes. Yes, yes. And I also like that you mentioned the metaverse topic. I mean, with all these virtual characters, avatars, but also NPCs, like non-player characters, I think this can be quite interesting, right? But I also had a question, because since you're an editor of the Effective Computing Journal, I'm sure you have lots of insights and, of course, see trends early. In general, do you actually see an uptake of submitted papers recently? Because I have a feeling the topic is gaining a lot of momentum these days.
There is a lot of momentum. There's a lot of submissions. The impact factor of the journal, which is one this metric that is being used to assess the importance of the journal, is quite high in comparison with other journals, which kind of highlights how important and what attention it's getting. And yeah, what we see evolving are some of the topics and areas. So we are seeing a growth, for example, in ethics of effective computing, which is great because now it's when it's most needed. But we keep seeing, for example, papers focus on how we can advance the measurement of emotions. How can we advance the science of emotions? How we can use these technologies to support users in unique ways.
Gotcha. Well, that's exciting. And also the aspect of the ethical side of things and responsible usage, I think, is, like you said, is definitely an important aspect, because we want to use this technology for the good and not for tricking people into certain things, right? And so in your opinion, how can effective computing improve the emotional health? And what are some of the, I would say, emotional intelligent tools that help us to further understand humans, while we can foster a greater quality of life and really help to make a significant impact for humans and especially mental health?
Wow, that's a big two questions at least.
Take your time. Back
there. I guess there are many challenges in effective computing. One of them is that there are very large individual differences when you think about emotions, right? What is happiness for you? Like, are you happy now? Are you sad? And if you are happy, what score do you have? Like, from 1 to 10, are you 9, 10, 7? And that 7 would be the same 7 as tomorrow. So unlike other fields of AI, the measurement of emotions, the measurement of ground truth is quite challenging, right? Not only because of the subjectivity aspect of it, but also because we don't have a universal theory of emotions. We have many theories, and they have been evolving and they have been improving over time, but still they are not as perfect as saying, oh, in this image there is a car, and 90% of the people will agree with that, right? It's much more challenging, it's much more nuanced, right? And there are some other challenges, like what should be private, what should be public, right? There are manifestations of emotions, but there are also internal states of emotions, right? So it's a very complex domain that we have to unpack. And when you think about those things and then you tie them back to specific domains, you start thinking about what are the possibilities there, right? So for example, we have seen a lot of efforts where they are trying to support people with, perhaps they have certain disabilities in terms of emotion regulation, right? If you have a technology that can make you aware of, for example, when you're getting stressed, that becomes very powerful, right? Because then we're giving you information to take control of your emotions. In that case, for example, we have a human AI collaboration paradigm, right? We don't want to use AI and just replace humans. We want to augment them in unique ways, right? Mm-hmm. We have also seen more recently that doctors have been using large language models to write more empathetic responses to patients. And those have been shown to be actually much more empathetic as perceived by the patients, right? So there is also an opportunity to improve communication and improve the support and well-being of patients in this case, right? At the same time, it will free up cycles from the doctors so they can have more follow-ups with patients, perhaps reaching out to more patients and things like that, right? And these are just a few cases, but you can imagine, as you said before, right? If you are in the virtual world and you are with NPCs and you're simulating environments, this has been done, for example, at Stanford, where they have simulations to treat PTSD, right? Post-traumatic stress disorder, right? They have veterans that they have undergone very stressful scenarios. And when they hear noises and they see specific things, they get triggered, right? So if you get that exposure, right? If your thing is spiders, for example, if you see the spiders, you can repeat that thing and get better at it, right? And when you think about that, I mean, you can apply it to public speaking, for example, which is also a big stressor for many people. Right now, I'm speaking with you, and I can feel myself that I'm kind of excited, perhaps a little bit stressed, but which is good, right? I need the stress to be able to perform. But having, for example, that training, and now with virtual worlds and other language models, there are unique possibilities for it.
Yes, and you know, I'm also what you said around the treating PTSD and treating mental health actually with VR. We also dived a little bit into this, and like you said, you know, this kind of exposure therapy is quite impressive. What can happen, like treating, you know, also like PTSD for like you know, veterans and things like this. But yeah, it's pretty impressive because you can simulate quite some crazy situation that. And you can easily start it step by step, kind of, right? And don't expose like fully. But obviously, you always need to have an expert, like a real like a mental health expert, of course, as part of this, right? And not just like here's a VR headset and here's an app, and now you get your therapy yourself, right? And I think it's important that we keep all the experts in the loop, right? Like these kind of cross-functional teams, I would say.
Definitely, yeah. We this is one of the things that we highlighted in some of the work on ethics. By bringing humans in the loop, you help minimize and the risk a lot of the potential user harms that you could see. And that's how we see these technologies. It's about augmenting users in unique ways, right? Making you more aware about the stress so you can take control of that situation. Helping therapists to have more empathetic interactions with their patients, or perhaps increasing their number of follow-ups by sending personalized messages that wasn't possible before.
Yeah. And what do you think are currently the most exciting applications of effective computing, and what's coming next? What do you see on the horizon?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we are living a unique time. Oftentimes when I speak about effective computing, or it used to be the case that I started sharing I guess some movie examples, right? Like Star Wars or Blade Runner. And I kind of say, oh, that's science fiction. That's too far away and it's not real, right? But during the recent year, there has been a big transformation in AI, right? And large language models and how they communicate. And they make it in such a natural manner, right? They can read sentiment cues. Like for example, say, I'm frustrated, or this person did this to me, right? It has some understanding about the world. So I think there are many unique possibilities around there. Our group is very interested and focused in the role of digital empathy. Basically, the ability of these models to put on themselves, on the user's shoes, to be able to provide guidance and advice. But as you can imagine, empathy is very human-like. So what does that look for technology, right? How can we measure it? How can we manifest it? And when is it useful, right? There are specific applications where it's more useful than others. So you can imagine, like for example, customer service, very, very useful. Creative generation of creative content, very useful. But perhaps when you are coding, not so much, right? So this is a big spectrum. So we are doing a lot of work and trying to understand where, for example, the future of copilots will play a role and when those extra abilities could be beneficial. And then, of course, when you pair that with the announcements on the metaverse, the new headsets and all that, I think there are unique opportunities there. More recently, Sora announcement from OpenAI, the ability to generate videos on demand, very high quality of 60 seconds. I think that opens a lot of possibilities, especially around effective computing.
Yes, I fully agree. And I mean, we can talk about it the whole day, but the part with Gen AI is, you know, there's a couple of folks that are worried about like, oh, this is going to take away like, you know, film a movie creator jobs and so on. And surely there are certain valid concerns in that field. But at the same time, I feel more optimistic about it because it's democratizing a lot of technology. And like, you know, like even like, you know, small startups or, you know, like researchers that don't have a huge budget, they can create some really outstanding stuff now with little budgets. And that's what I'm excited about. It's empowering many, many more people. And that's a great feature. And I think you will still need the experts. It's not like these machines are going to, you know, or these AI systems are going to remove the experts. It's rather new tools, right? And sometimes I compare it with, you know, when back in the days when photography was invented, you know, painters were saying, oh, you guys are faking it. Now you're taking photos, right? We have to paint it all. And so it was just a new tool, right? No one these days is complaining. Photography is an art form in itself, right? Like back in the days when it was introduced, this was impossible. So I think we're also in this process. But of course, we got to make sure all of this is used responsibly, and also artists are getting their fair share and are not just ripped off kind of with for the training data. But yeah, I'm also super excited about all of this.
Yeah, it's every single innovation, as you say, photography being one of them, computers, cell phones, the print, bicycles, each of those, they created a lot of fear on people, and for good reasons, right? They are changing the status quo, right? The people have to change, have to assimilate new patterns of behavior, right? And assimilating AI can be stressful for many people, especially if they are not used to incorporating these skills, so they have to get familiar with computers and all that. But again, as you said, I think we are interested in this idea of augmenting users, right? How we can unlock your potential and the quality of these models. I mean, it's good. I mean, anyone who has tried ChatGPT or any of these models, you can get very high quality, but usually it's not the last thing that you will send to production. It's not the best product that you will get if you hire a human or something like that. It's more like a starting point for those people to get awesome stuff done.
Exactly. And it's always the human in the loop, right? And Microsoft folks, when they talk about Copilot, they will always say it's called Copilot for a reason. It's not an autopilot, right? And that's mm-hmm. the case with all Gen AI tools. Human in the loop is a key aspect, and like, you know, we should rather be optimistic about the things that it enables and the time it's saving. It's a huge productivity gain.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. Well, Javier, thank you so much. I think this is exciting. And I definitely feel also the excitement for effective computing. We're already at the end of the show. Thank you so much, Javier, for joining us today and sharing your insights. That is very much appreciated.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate being here.
And thanks everyone for joining us for Digital Dialogues, your compact conversations on the future of tech. Watch our blog, follow our social media, and subscribe to the Reply podcast channels to not miss the next episodes. And of course, you can listen to all previous episodes of this and other podcasts at any time at reply.com. Take care and see you soon. Bye-bye.